Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I just need to go right here. So with an introduction like that, I don't think I need to say much more. I have a very unique job, and I would love to tell you stories of Sturgis, but I don't think I can water them down enough for this organization. So I am the safety officer for the Upper Company Conference. I work very closely with our churches and pastors and schools and all ministries within our conference to ensure that we have the safest possible ministries that we can have. In the Upper Columbia Conference, we are striving to make safety at the top of the core culture of our ministries, from the president all the way down. In all the years that I've been doing this, and law enforcement, I can say I've spent far more time on my knees in this role than I ever did in law enforcement. The threats that face our church and our ministries continue to grow and grow, and I think it's no secret that the devil knows his time is short. And we all long for the day where we can be having this conversation in heaven, where there is no more threats, no more pain, and no more sin. All right, how do I drive this? Are we future ready? That is the question. Can we ever be ready for the future? I remember this day like it was yesterday. I came home from work. I walked up the driveway. I could smell supper cooking in the kitchen. I walked in the house, and my wife was standing there cooking supper. And she turned to me and she greeted me as I walked in, but she had this look on her face. It wasn't a mean look. It wasn't necessarily a happy look, it was just a look. And as I walked past her to go to their bedroom to change my clothes, I started thinking, did I spend too much money? No, I didn't spend anything. I wonder if she wrecked the car. Oh, no, it wasn't wrecked. Of course, you know, this is 3 years of marriage here, I still thought I could figure out what my wife was thinking. So as I pondered this, I realized I wasn't going to figure out what she was thinking. So I changed my clothes and went and sat down and enjoyed a meal with her. Well, about 5 minutes into the meal, she looks up from her dinner and she says, I have some news. I said, you don't say. And the two words that came out of her mouth next changed my life forever. I'm pregnant. And it wasn't a surprise. I mean, we had talked about this. We had started trying to pick out names. We had discussed which room was going to be the nursery. This was a planned thing. But this wasn't talk anymore, friends. Okay? The train has left the station. This is happening. And this isn't a puppy I can just, well, this isn't working here. We'll take the lab. You know? This is a lifelong commitment that I'm now responsible for. And I was terrified, to be honest with you. Terrified of what the future held for me. Am I ready to be a father? Am I responsible enough to be a father? My cat won't even listen to me. How am I going to raise a child? I remember a shift in my mindset. Instead of sitting there on the couch reading my motorcycle magazines and watching motocross races, I was now researching the best on and off-road strollers that were made. What is the best safety ratings for car seats? How to safety-proof your house? My mind had started to slowly shift into how can I be the best father and prepare the best, safest environment for my child. I remember going to the well baby visits. I remember listening to the heartbeat. I remember laying in bed one night because I had to get up early and go to work, and my wife said, honey, we gotta go. And I still remember thinking, go where? It's 11 o'clock at night, and then it hit me. I remember when the doctor handed me my little daughter, and I remember looking down at her going, well, God, you gave this to me. I guess we're going to do this together. I remember the first 6 months of her life, and honestly, things didn't really change for me, because let's be honest, Mom did most of the work. And then she says, I found a great university here. I want to go back and finish my degree. And I said, terrific. You found a school that can take Taryn with you. And she looks at me and she goes, no, Taryn's staying home with you. And I thought, alone? I'm not checked out on this model. What? And I remember that night, she had her little bag all prepared for me. Taryn was sitting in her high chair, and I watched the taillights fade off into the distance. And I looked over at my daughter, and she looked at me, and then she started crying. But you know what? We got through it. We got through it. I remember first grade. I remember her graduating from academy. And now, at 21 years of age, I could not be prouder of the young woman that she has become. And I know that her life and my role in it is in God's hands. Amen. And that is the only thing that I can put my trust in. Amen. How do we prepare for the future that's coming? We're going to come back to this in a second, but being a good steward values what has been entrusted in their care and protect and preserve everything in it as it was their own, yet acknowledging that the earth and all that is in it belongs to God. Keep that in mind because we're going to come back and talk about that in just a moment. Building the right fence. Notice how I put plural, fences. I get many calls from pastors, and they say, Brent, or elders or other leaders in the church, Brent, we want to start a security team. Have you seen the news? Have you seen the things that are going on here? And you see the things that are going on there? We want to start a security team. I say, great, let's start a security team. What do you have in mind? And they go, okay, so three of our members are ex-Navy SEALs. Two of our members are former Army Rangers. We've got a couple of cops in our congregation. And I go, oh. All right, okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to reinforce this wall, and we're going to put turrets here and turrets here, and then we're going to do this, and then Brother Earl's going to fly his C-130 around the church during Sabbath. Now, I'm heavily exaggerating, but I asked them, I say, okay, great plan, but you guys have built this 30-foot fence around your church with razor wire and turrets and spotlights. Is that the only threat that's facing our church? You know, see, fences can be built to hold keep people out. They can also be kept to keep people in, okay? So is this the only threat that you're facing? So if a foreign enemy chooses to invade your church on Sabbath, you guys are in great shape. But the likelihood of that is very slim. What other fences do we build in our church? Okay, the only way that we are going to be able to stand against the schemes of the devil, especially in the future, is if we stand shoulder to shoulder with each other against those schemes. Okay? That is the only way we are going to prevent misconduct and misdoing in our church. I can't prevent it. I can come up here and talk to you about it. But this is the only way we are going to prevent it. Too many times, I get calls for incidents in churches where I go to. And typically when I get called, it's because there's violence. Somebody has pounded on a desk, overturned a chair. It's a hostile situation in some board. And that's when I get called. And I drive all the way over to these meetings. And now it's 7 o'clock at night, and I'm 2 hours away from my house. And I'm sitting there listening to this, mediating this argument. And I'm like, I just drove 2 hours for this, friends. I mean, are we in third grade? Here's the thing about being an American. We have the right to an opinion, don't we? And you know what makes our churches so successful? Is that we all bring value to the table, don't we? We have electricians, we have doctors, we have bus drivers and truck drivers. We have so many diverse levels of skill in our church that makes us as strong as we are. We also have personalities that can be equally as strong, okay? But I've had fist fights just in the last couple of months over Conrad Vine. Really? I've had fist fights over the use of the COVID-19 vaccine versus natural remedies such as ivermectin. Okay? And I'm going, I just drove 2 hours for this. Okay? So you believe that COVID-19 is the best for everyone and it's the cure-all, right? You took it. So what are you worried about if this guy didn't? I'm sorry, this is my cop humor, but when we do this, when we fight with each other, are we standing shoulder to shoulder in our church? No, We're building fences, aren't we? That's right. And if we keep building these fences, we wind up looking like the animal shelter, which, by the way, my family is forbidden to visit. When they tell you, we're just going to go look, Dad. Anyway, we go to the animal shelter, and we've got all these cute little cages, don't we? We got the kitties here, and we got the puppies here, and they're all playing happily within their own cages. Meanwhile, we're just walking around looking at them. And the same goes for our church, friends. As we're fighting with each other over immaterial things, the devil's walking right down the aisle going, excellent, excellent, my plan is working. As we build our fences, we want to be aware of the issues. That's why we talk about it. People have asked me, you know, Brent, do you really think that talking about this kind of stuff in church is appropriate? Well, let me ask you this. How many of you in your marriages have had difficult conversations with your family? It could be over finances, child discipline, whatever the case may be, right? Well, are we not a church family? We need to have this conversation because it's very real and it's things that are very much affecting our church. Developing a safety mindset, okay? When I was in the police academy, they handed us these stupid orange guns, and we had to wear them everywhere we went, and heaven forbid you lost one. That was bad news bears, right? And we had to train for hours standing in the same position, and they would go, ready, draw, scan, holster, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, because it is proven that in a critical incident, you will revert back to your training. Your mind will automatically revert back to your training. And even now, thankfully, I don't have to carry that everywhere. My back thanks me for that. But even now, I can easily rock down, push forward, pull the release, and pull it out without even thinking about it, because I did it so many hundreds of times. And that's why we talk about training. That's why we talk about fire drills. That's why we talk about emergency procedures in our church. And I'm going to talk about the Cooper Color Code of Awareness. The first one is white, the white color code of awareness. We are unaware and unprepared for any type of critical incident. And that is pretty much all of us right here in this church. And I will be the first one to admit, all my years in law enforcement, Sabbath brought on a whole new meaning to me personally. Because Sabbath was a day that I could spend with my family. Sabbath was a day that I could shed off the world and the filth, and I could go worship and fellowship with people of like mind and faith. I didn't have to listen to the F word every other sentence. I didn't have to deal with the alcohol and the abuse and all the stuff that this world brings forward. I could be with my church family. So I was the biggest sheep in the entire church. And people will come up to me and go, Brent, what do you think about that guy? I don't know. Looks fine to me. I'm off duty. Unfortunately, friends, we are moving into a different era of threats against our church. So if you look at yellow, you are aware of your surroundings, you're prepared, but you're relaxed. So what does that mean about being aware of our surroundings, right? Going back to our scripture reading, for I send you out among as sheep amongst wolves, that you be what? Wise as a serpent, but harmless as a dove. Now, I'm the biggest Second Amendment fan you'll find, but I do not believe that it takes a gun to stop a gun. We don't need to have 500 guns in the church. We do, however, need to be aware of our surroundings. Okay? people have said, you know, Brent, our churches can be so unfriendly. And how do we fix this? Okay, so I'll throw out a suggestion. When you have a visitor that comes to your church, we have no idea who they are. We have no idea what they've done, what they represent. They could be the nicest family in the world, or they could not be. We have no idea. They could be here to worship and to join our church, or they could be here to steal the air conditioning units. We have no idea. In fact, I'll digress for a minute. There was a little Baptist church that was on the road that I went to work every day, and they had this little sign out in front, and they had these little sayings, you know, like Jesus loves you, potlucks on Sunday, and all those kind of sayings. And I really didn't pay much attention to it until one day I drove by and said, to whoever stole our air conditioning units, Keep them, because you're going to need them. I still chuckle today when I see that. But as you get new people in the church, overwhelm them with kindness, with greeting. You know, get to know them. Hey, where are you from? Oh, really? I have friends that live there. What part of town? You know, get to know them. Ask them a million questions. Escort them into the church. Have them sit down. And then have somebody else go attack them with kindness and questions. And at the end of that, you're going to get one of two things. Either they're going to realize this church is paying attention and I don't want to be here, or this is the nicest church I've ever been to and I want to be here. Be aware, be present, and be intentional as members of our church. I'm going to skip to black. Black is the color code of awareness that when you are unprepared, unaware, and your emotions just freeze. Okay? There's a fire in the building. We haven't discussed where the exits are. You can't see anything, and our emotions just freeze. Okay? If we practice and we talk about it and we train with each other, we will have a plan, and in the event of a critical incident, you will know what to do. Each and every one of us play a leadership role in our church, don't we? Whether it's in women's ministries, children's ministries, deacons, elders, church events that we're responsible for, all of us play a leadership role in someone else's ministry. And it's kind of funny, we talk about it in the conference, there really is no chain of command, so to speak. Because every single one of us serve in someone else's ministries, don't we? Support someone else's ministries. And we have a duty to protect, don't we? I mentioned this earlier. Each one of us bring value to the church. Each one of us have special skills that we bring to the church. Use them. Use those skills and the personalities that come with them. If I quit the first time someone yelled at me, I would have been gone a long time ago. So use the strong personalities. God has put every single one of us here for a reason, hasn't he? You represent something larger than yourself. This one is a harder conversation to have with some. Each one of us have a burden on our heart to serve. And we all have a burden on our heart to serve in many different ways, right? Just remember this. When you bring that here, you represent something more than just yourself. So you are introducing something into the church family that is beyond you. You have four bald tires on your car, right? Now, if you choose to drive that car with four bald tires to work because you just need to wait till the next paycheck to put tires on your car, that's your deal. That's your business, right? But then on Tuesday, Michael from the Pathfinder Club calls and says, hey, can you drive the van, your van for a club event on Wednesday? Are you representing somebody larger than yourself at that point now? You are. You are. And that's what I mean by representing something larger than yourself. I work very closely with members of other conferences and the North American Division. We attend the Adventist Risk Management meetings every year to discuss the risk as it pertains to the whole church within the North American Division. In the last 20 years, they paid out over $130 million in lawsuits. In the last 10 years, there was 213 cases of abuse. In 2023, they paid out over $100 million in just one incident in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. These range in nature from minor misunderstandings to serious cases of abuse. The pastors, teachers, members of the church. And of all of that, only two cases were from outside of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. I know it's kind of sombering to hear, but that's the reality of the future that we are heading into. Whoops, how'd I go back? I had a really sweet lady, when we talk about what is the solution to this, come up with this. And as sweet as she was, I couldn't but help find the humor of putting a TSA station in every foyer across the land. The six-month rule plan. We talk about the six-month rule. Oh, thank you. We encourage, how many of you have heard of a six-month rule when it comes to volunteers and whatnot? We encourage the six-month rule. It is basically when you get a new member that comes in that wants to volunteer, give them 6 months before you nominate them to a leadership role or put them in a Sabbath school classroom or give them a leadership role at all. Just give them 6 months. Gives you a chance as a church family to get to know them, what works, what doesn't work, before we just thrust them into a leadership role. We provide, conduct reference checks on all of the volunteers that serve in leadership roles. We do it at the conference level. We do criminal background checks through Sterling. I'm sure all of you have heard of Sterling volunteers that we use within the church. We provide training. We have zero tolerance for misconduct, and we'll report every single one of them. The two adult rule, we heavily encourage that if you serve in a position of leadership or in a ministry role with someone else, say. So especially young people. We live in a day and age, I didn't even have a cell phone until I was like 25 years old. Now they have them, they're like 13, okay? It's a very common mode of communication. And I cannot tell you how many people have gotten themselves in a sticky situation because of cell phone communication, right? There's no context to the text, there's just a text. I had a Pathfinder director. Let me back up. We have such a lack of family intimacy in this country. And who typically is the gender raising the family? It's the mother, right? And these young people crave male interaction and male structure. And they will attach themselves to Pathfinder directors, pastors, leaders. And there's nothing wrong with that. We should 100% support that and be part of that. But we have to recognize that they're not our children. And how we communicate with them can get us in trouble. Now, I had this, like going back to this Pathfinder counselor, he had a young lady that just adored him. And he was doing wonderful things with her. And then one night, she texted him a picture of a Facebook Marketplace ad of a car. And in the text, she said, "I'm thinking about buying my first car. What do you think?" He responded to her and said, "Hey, great choice, congratulations. Those are known for having transmission problems. You may want to have it looked at." Right? Pretty innocent. Except for the fact that 2 weeks later, her mom was going through her phone and saw that text. And then based on her training that she had received, she recognized that as grooming and pushed the nuclear launch button. So now I'm getting emails going, "Why is the conference protecting these people?" I'm like, what? That's how quickly it can get misconstrued. So if you are going to engage in text conversations, do it with somebody else. Make it a husband and wife partnership. Find somebody else that wants to work with you on it and have a group thread that you send text. Don't ever just do it phone to phone. That can cause serious problems. Appropriate touch. Probably don't need to talk about that one. It's pretty self-explanatory. Appropriate child discipline. Okay, going back to, these are not your kids. Okay, my own son, there are times that I would look at him and go, "Dude, are we even related?" But I would never say that to somebody else's child. You know, we have to remember what theater in which we're operating, okay, when we're dealing with other people's kids. Because their level of discipline and yours may differ greatly. Observation and awareness. Again, we're going to talk about observation. Watching and being aware of the threats that face our church and our young people. Whoops. One of the lawyers at ARM said this one time, and I thought it was so great. He said, "We get in trouble not for what we do, but for what we didn't do." All right. The only reason I'm bringing this up is because I get so many calls about it. And I figured, what a great time to talk about it when I've got you all in one room. Who is a mandatory reporter? Are you guys all mandatory reporters? The state of Washington says any person in his or her official supervisory capacity with a nonprofit or for-profit organization who has reasonable cause to believe that a child has suffered abuse or neglect caused by a person over whom he or she regularly exercises supervisory authority, provided that the person alleged to have caused the abuse or neglect is employed by, contracted by, or volunteers with the organization and coaches, trains, educates, or counsels a child or children, or regularly has unsupervised access to a child or children as part of employment, contract, or voluntary service. That pretty much applies to all of us, doesn't it? When is a report required? Reasonable cause to believe that a child has suffered abuse or neglect. Okay, that's pretty self-explanatory. You guys probably already all knew that. My question is now what? Right? So we've recognized there's an issue, we've reported it, now what? Right? Well, that's where I come in. I will never tell you not to report something, ever. However, I would appreciate a call, and I will help you walk through that process. The who, what, why, when, where, and I will take that away from you so that you can no longer have to carry it, okay? That way all questions can be directed to me, and I will handle the situation outside of the church. So if you guys ever have any questions or concerns, call me. My number will be on the last slide at the end of the day. That's my personal cell phone number. Feel free to save it and use it. Volunteer screening, okay? I get so many questions on this, so I thought we would talk about it for a second. All adults over the age of 18 involved in any leadership capacity or involved in children's or youth ministries, all church ministry leaders and officers voted or appointed by the local church, and volunteers for annual events such as Journey to the Cross, Journey to Bethlehem, all need to go through Adventist screening verification. Okay? We have three levels of volunteer eligibility. Level one, it's eligible to volunteer in any capacity. Level two, may volunteer but not be directly in charge of children and must be in the presence of a level one volunteer. Okay? Where does this information go? I get a lot of questions about that. I am the only one in the office that sees this information, and I am 100% for encouraging every single person who wishes to minister and be part of our ministry teams to do that and be successful in it. So just because someone has a skeleton in their closet does not mean they cannot be a volunteer. We look at past history. We looked at recency. So if you were convicted 25 years ago of felony possession of methamphetamine, but have not had a single scratch on your record for 25 years, of course you can volunteer, okay? If it was 6 months ago, probably not, okay? I had a lady was nominated to be the treasurer for the church, and just as part of routine, she went through the volunteer screening, and her thing came back with a conviction of theft 6 months prior. So obviously I pumped the brakes on that one. But the people got upset with me. You can't do that. Well, hold on. Let me look into it. So I looked into it. And this sweet lady lived next door to a family that had a dog. And this dog was always on the chain, was never off the chain, no food, no water. And she befriended this dog. And she would pet the dog at the fence. She would bring the dog water. She would bring the dog food. And then one night, it was snowing, and she sees this dog huddled up underneath the porch, freezing. So she takes it upon herself, unclips the dog, and takes it to the animal shelter. The neighbors happened to see this on their doorbell camera and called the police. Even the police said, we didn't want to do this, but the neighbors forced us to. So is she good to go to be a church treasurer? Absolutely. We want everyone to be part of our church. We want everyone successful in their ministries. However, we have a duty to protect our vulnerable members, don't we? We have a duty to protect everyone within our church. When we run criminal background checks for Sterling volunteers, we're asking for criminal history, motor vehicle driving record if you choose to drive, and then we look and see if you're on the registry. Those are the only three things that we look for. The problem is that the state of Washington combines all of this reporting into one document called consumer reporting. So credit checks, credit history, bank statements, all of that is considered a consumer report. So when you're going through all the disclaimers to do your Sterling background check, all that's listed in there. And I get so many phone calls, why does the church want our banking information? Do you not think that you were paying our fair share of tithe? They were giving away in the conference office all of the old stuff that's been floating around the office forever. And I was walking down the hall and there was this red phone, you know, like on the president's desk. I'm like, oh. So I took it and now it's in my office and it sits right by my computer and it says tithe enforcement hotline on the handle. Because I've been asked that too many times. That's the only information we're asking for, okay? So in closing, are we future ready? Are we wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove? Have we taken the steps to be aware? Going back to being a good steward, are we aware of our surroundings? Are we tearing down fences that don't need to be built? Are we building the right fences that we need in our church to protect our ministries as we head deeper into the future? Are we recognizing the value that each and every member bring to this church and utilizing that to build a safe safety culture here within our church? And as being good stewards, are we utilizing all these tools to be the best stewards that we can possibly be for the most important resource that God has entrusted with us, and that's each other? Let's bow our heads. Father in heaven, you, above all, know the threats that are facing our church. You knew these threats before the church is even here. And Lord, we know that our lives and our church is in your hands. And we ask that as we move forward, that you give us patience, you give us wisdom. Somebody turn it off.
Seems as though our time together to fellowship has just come to a very quick ending. I felt like we haven't been together long enough, but we are all inviting everyone to fellowship and extend our time together at our event center for a potluck. In closing, we'd like you to turn to your hymnals to page 312, Near the Cross. We'll sing the first and the last verse. Shall we all stand? From Canada. Father, bless us as we leave your presence.